Okay, we're starting today on Tevav Amudbet. We have been going through a whole long sugya about what we do like Beit Shammai, what we do about Beit Hillel. I'm just going to remind you of the case. We have two brothers. I figure if we keep going over it again, it'll just be obvious, which probably by this point it is. We have two brothers. We have two wives married to one of the brothers. Then this wife is an erva to the second brother. So when this guy dies, the first brother dies without children. They have to do yibum. The problem is the erva can't do yibum with the other brother. The machloket Beit Shammai Beit Hillel is the second wife, because of she was connected with this erva to this husband, is the second wife p'turah from yibum from the brother. And therefore, if we go according to that, which is Beit Hillel's opinion, then if she does actually marry him, the kids will be mamzerim, because he is an Isur of Eshet Ach. The other option is Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says, no, she is mutar to the brother. Because she's mutar to the brother, that makes her chayav to marry the brother, which means that if she goes and marries somebody else without taking care of Yibam or Chalitza, that's an Isur Lav. Her kids will be kids of an Isur Lav, which we now said makes them pasula kihuna, okay? Which means they can't marry a kohen. If that's what they do, because they're an Isur Lav, okay? So those are our two options: either Beit Hillel, who says if she goes and marries the brother, it's Eshet Ach, or Beit Shammai, who says if she goes out, it doesn't take care of Yibum with the brother, then it's Isur Lav with the other guy, because she's not allowed to marry until she deals with Yibum.
What was the issue when somewhere a few pages ago, where they said there were two levels of karet within, like, the more serious one, or did I not inform my missing
something else? There was something about karet or mito beitin. Is that what you're thinking of, or no? No.
I thought there was something.
About two levels of karet?
Yeah, there was a very brief
thing. Two levels of
karet? I didn't understand it. Did you understand
it? No, it was something in the notes more than in the text.
Oh, in the notes, okay. I didn't notice it in the notes.
Yeah, I didn't understand it.
Okay, if you want to show me after class, I'm happy to look at it.
After my
I didn't come across it, so.
Amud Bet?
We are on Tet Vav Amud Bet at the bottom. Okay, so we're going to go back for one quick minute, okay, to what happens here. Now, they went to Rabbi Yoshua, and they said to him, Sarat habat mahu. Okay, what I wanted to show you here is, for those of you who are more familiar with the sugya that we just did yesterday, the Tosefta, all of these sources that we saw are all in the Tosefta, and they're organized in a different order than they're organized here. And our Gemara keeps bringing in, let's use this source to prove that Beit Shammai actually did like they said. And the whole question here that we've been dealing with is, we have this machloket. Now, the issue is, what happened with Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Did they each go l'shitatam, or did Beit Shammai concede to Beit Hillel and do what they said? So, we obviously, when I talked about the mamzerim and the psulei kuna, we obviously have a big problem. According to Beit Shammai, if she goes and marries, she should marry the Esherach. If she marries the Esherach, then according to Beit Hillel, all those kids are mamzerim. That's a big problem, right? Because now we're going to have all these people marrying each other. Or can't be marrying each other. Beit Hillel's going to say, I can't marry your people, you can marry my people. Right? Then we have this whole thing, how they each respected each other, and they told each other, according to some of the opinions, they said, oh, don't marry this one, because according to you, she's psula. Okay, but there's a big question. Now, if Beit Hillel goes ahead and does his thing, so the people of Beit Shammai aren't going to want to marry their kids, l'kuhuna anyway. In other words, it's a problem for the kuhuna. So either which way, we have an issue, and that therefore this became a very central issue, both because it dealt with marriage and who's marrying who, and it dealt with the core questions they were dealing with in Dor Yavne, which is who do we paskin like, and is there one central authority? And in those days, there wasn't yet, it was after the Churban, it was kind of all over the place. They hadn't yet decided halacha kebeit Hillel, and they were trying to figure out what happened to Beit Shammai. Did Beit Shammai actually continue to do their opinion or not? So the Gemara brought all sorts of sources that seemed totally disconnected. Oh, there was a thing here that Rabbi Tarfon said, and there was a thing there that they asked Rabbi Yeshua, and there was a thing there with Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri who wanted to make a takana. If you look, just take a quick look at the Tosefta. The Tosefta puts these all together. The Tosefta starts out, not that the Tosefta puts them all together, but really, these all came from one set of halachot together in the Tosefta. Okay, so there should be enough copies for everyone, I think.
It's fine.
Okay. Fine. So in the Tosefta, everything is strung together. Okay? And seemingly, it was all one unit, and the Bavli just picked out different sections and put them out. But if you look at them in order, it's actually interesting. So it starts off, Nityamu Beit Shammai, Omer, Heng Shirod Vavlad Kasher Beit Hillel Omerim Heng Psula Vavlad Mamzer. Fine, that's the case. Now, Amar B'Yochanan Ben Yuri, Bo Re'eha Halachazo Ravachap Yisrael, came to Rebbe Beit Shammai, Havlad Mamzer, Kedivrei Beit Hillel, Kedivrei Beit Hillel, Im Lekeim, Kedivrei Beit Shammai, Havlad Pagum, Kedivrei Beit Shammai. Ela Bo V'Natkin Lehem, this was his idea, let's make a takana, Shiyu Atzarot Chotzot V'lo Matyabmot. So he said, let's make this takana. We saw this, right? That everyone has to do chalitza. And then we'll resolve the issue. They won't do yibum, so they won't marry. But they'll at least do chalitza, so they'll be patra from the tzara. And that will deal with Beit Shammai's opinion. And then they can go marry whoever they want to marry. And that way we keep our thing on both sides. But what happened? They didn't finish. And nitrafa sha'a, the enemies came and attacked or something. Something must have happened. And they never made this takana. So then, Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, Mana Selen Latzarot HaRishonot. Okay, remember this came at the very end of that section. And then they stopped. That was the end of the section. But then it says, Shalu at Rabbi Yoshua. In other words, as a lead-in from Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel's question about what do we do with what, even if we were to make this takana, what do we do with everyone from before? And then they asked Rabbi Yoshua, so what do we do? Notice, by the way, there's a different nusach. Here it says, B'nei Tzarot. And by us it says, Tzarat HaBat. Tzarat Habad, it almost sounds like maybe they were talking about a particular case. Here they're saying in general, the B'nai Tzarot, what do we do with all these people? Which seems to connect it with Ma Naselem L'Tzarot HaRishono. What do we do with all the ones that were? So then he starts saying this thing that we saw, Lama Tamach Nisim Roshi Be'en Shnei Harim V'Dolim L'Bein Be'en Shammai U'Bein Beit Hillel Shiaritzu Et Roshi, they're going to kill me. Who's going to kill him? The Mamzerim, right? Who anyone who's considered now a Mamzer, according to one opinion, will have my head. But then he does this, he says, Meinid ani al mishpacha beit aluvai, and the other mishpacha, shehem kohanim gdolim, vayu makrivim lakabei mizbech. And then Amar Rabbi Tarfon, te'ev ani shtei li tzarat habat v'asiyena l'kuuna. Okay, first of all, asiyena comes up here, and not, right, not how they want to say, what was the difference, asiyena or, asiyena means I will marry her off, not esaena. Okay, esaena means I will marry her. He said, how can he want to, right? How can he want his daughter to be, her husband to die? Ask the enemies, I'll marry her off. So that Rabbi Tarfon's statement came within the context of this whole discussion, it seems like. So anyway, we're going to stop here because we don't have enough time, but I just wanted you to see that these all come from the Tosefta and they're linked together. And here in our Bavli, they're kind of, taking this one to prove that, this one to prove that, this one to ask a question. Anyway, we're in the middle of the story of Rabbi Yoshua. They wanted to understand why did, when they asked Rabbi Yoshua, they asked him first about the B'nai Tzarot. They asked about the Tzarot. Okay, they started Tzarat Habat Mahu. What about the Tzara herself? And he answered them about the children. Okay, that was what he said. I know about these two mishpachot that ended up with Kohanim Gdolim. So let's go back for 9 lines from the bottom. So the Gemara says here, Tarte Kabaomine, Tarte. They asked 2 things from him. They asked him not only about the tzarot, can the tzara marry or not, right? Tzarot mai. V'im timtze lomar tzarot ke Beit Hillel. And if you want to say that the tzarot are like Beit Hillel, that they can marry out without doing yibum or chalitza, then b'nei tzarot to Beit Hillel lebeit Shammai mahu. So then the children born from this marriage of the woman who marries someone out, right, without dealing with yibum, which we said before was an isur lav, right? And if it's an Isur Lav, then what do we say? This is the question. Do we say, I already set it up by saying that they are Psulei Kehuna, but now they're saying, they're raising it as a question. Are they really Psulei Kehuna? Okay, Mahu. Now they're going to ask. They want to know, right, are we going to learn this from, that's what we saw this Kavachomer yesterday, the Kavachomer Me'almana. In Almana is Asura to the Kohen Gadol, but only a Kohen Gadol, not a Kohen Adyor, not a Yisrael. Now, if she marries a Kohen Gadol, that pasuls her Lekuna. Once she's pasul Lekuna, right, that basically means her kids are Pgumim, and she's a Chalala, okay, and her kids. And they can't marry Kohenim. So they're saying, just like an Almana, She'ein Yisura Noheg Bakol, right, so Bana Pagum, Azoshi Yisura Shaveh Bakol, also, that's where we ended yesterday, right? Zoshi Surah Shaveh B'Kol, which is this case. The Tzara her isur to marry here is to anybody. It's not specifically for a kohen. So now we're going to say, obviously, we're going to pagum her children. That's the kal v'chomer. Okay? So now the Gemara is saying, they asked about sarot, but then he goes into also children. And what he's telling her is that these children, he's telling her against what we said before, that sarot, the kids from this relationship are not a problem. Okay, what did he say? How do we know this? Because he said, I saw these mishpachot, okay? So even according to Beit Shammai, that this is an usher forbidden relationship, they accepted them as Kohanim Gedolim. That seems to be the assumption here. It doesn't really mention Beit Shammai here, but it says they became Kohanim Gedolim. They became Kohanim Gedolim, right? It said Kohanim Gedolim, right? B'shimshu al gabei mizbeach. The assumption is they were accepted by everybody. So in the end, he's telling us that even though in theory, if this was really an Isur Lav, the kids should be Pgumim, in this case, Beit Shammai didn't make the kids Pgumim. Okay? That's what he's basically saying. So now, the Gemara says a really interesting question. Lamai nafkamina, why do we really care? What's the difference if... You need to find the place? Okay. You can make it much bigger here. What's the difference if they were... Let me just find this for you. Okay. Lamai nafkamina. What's the difference if... Why do we care what Beit Shammai thought about Beit Hillel's children? Really, in the end, we pass like Beit Hillel. So what is the relevance of this question at all that they asked him? Okay, which is a strange question because the whole thing we were trying to figure out what happened historically and were they accepting, were they not accepting? But the Gemara is very practical minded and they want to know, hala, like what's this relevant to us? Or why was it even relevant to them what Beit Shammai's people thought of it? So they say now, this is really the question. This issue would be the same issue. Okay, we're going to make an analogy. The tzarat habat marrying the ish zar, right, without dealing with yibum is equivalent to the machzir grushato. Okay, a regular machzir grushato, you get divorced. She marries someone else in between. Then she goes back to her husband. So both of these are in Isur Lav. And we want to know whatever would be true for the Tzarat HaBat and Ishtar would be the same as the Machzir Grushato in terms of their children. And that's why he brought this up. Or that's why this is relevant to us anyway. So they're saying, according, because this is only relevant to Beit Shammai. And that's what's bothering the Gemara. Beit Shammai isn't really relevant to us. We don't hold like it. So they're saying no. Because even according to Beit Hillel, they say the same thing by Machzir Grushato. Because why? You can make the exact same kal v'chomer. Mi ka'amrin on kal v'chomer. Do we say this kal v'chomer? Uma amana lekohen gadol she'en isura shaveh bekol benap pagum. Right? So if you have an amana lekohen gadol and her isur is only for one specific guy, and yet we say her sons are pagumim, they can't marry kohanim. So zo she isura shaveh bekol, just like the Machzir Grushato, it's anybody, right? Obviously, it's only to the guy who divorced her. But obviously, the guy who divorced her could be a Kohen, a Levi, Israel. It could be anyone. So, Ein Odin Shepina Pagum, right? Wouldn't we say that? O Dilma, or maybe we would say, Ika Lemifrach. We can make a distinction. What could we say? And this is why Rabbi Yeshua in the end says, they were Kohanim Gedolim, because here's how we can break this Kal V'chomer. Ma Almana Shehi Atzma Mitchalelet. What's the issue with that's the end of the sentence. Ma almana shehi atzma mitchalelet. The almana is more chamor. Even though her eini surah shaveh b'kol and that makes her kal, she's got a chumra. What's her chumra? If she marries this kohen gadol, she herself is mechulelet. That means mitchalelet. That means she now can't marry a regular kohen, even though before she was just an almana, she was allowed to. She can't eat truma anymore. Okay, her isur is much more chamor now. So therefore, we can't learn from her to a regular tzara who marries this guy who nothing happens to her, or a machzir grushato, right? It's an isur, but there's no ramifications, right? It only has ramifications really for her children. Yeah, she's over on an isur lav, but nothing about her is transformed. Whereas with the almana, she's really transformed. And therefore he says, that's why, so we said two things now. That's why he came to teach us that the kids are not pgumim, even though generally you might say an Isur Lav would be, but in this case, the kids are not pgumim because we can't make this kal v'chomer necessarily. Okay, this kal v'chomer, in order for a kal v'chomer to work, you can't have a tzad chamor in the kal. Right? This almana has something chamor about her that means that we can't learn about this to other things. Okay? So now they say, mityare ani b'neitzarot ani, sorry.
Even towards the children, it's not the same because as a pagum for Yisrael, it doesn't really matter. It's more of an...
No, but the question is, does it become pagum l'kihuna?
Right, but if but it has, as a child pagum that's in a Kohen family, it has more...
Much more ramifications. That's true. But in the end, well, right, but that's...
Like, who cares if you're a pagum child and you can't eat truma? You're not...
No, but you can't...
You can't...
You're right that you can't eat truma, but you can't marry the same people that the other person can't marry. In other words, again, if you're a girl or a boy, it has also differences. Because the girl is... possible for marrying, and the boy just can't be a Kohen, right? He can't function as a Kohen. It's true that there's differences about it, but this is the main thing they want to focus on. And then, Va'amar Lehu, Sarot, Mityare Ani, right, and then what does he answer them? So now we're going back. They asked him two questions. He asked, what about the Tzara? Can she marry or not? Number two, what happens to the kids? So, Tzarot, Mityare Ani. I don't want to say halacha kedivrei mi. I don't want to start having people isurei karet to other people, and you know, I don't want to get involved in that. But b'nei tzarot ani me'id lachem. But when it comes to the children of the tzarot, that I can testify about, that you don't have to worry, they're not psulim. Why? Because even according to Beit Shammai, they would be in isur lav, they're still not considered gumim, because we can't make this kal v'chomer from the almanah. Okay? Because the only case we really have that the Yiladim are Plumim is this Almanah case. And he says we can't learn it from there. Okay? So now, okay. That's basically, it's not really the end of this section, but that's the end of that part, the small part that we brought about Rabbi Yoshua. But now it really continues. Okay? You can really see, especially from this story, this is really the highlight story. It takes up almost this whole Amud. And it's all about the struggles here between who's koveya halacha and who's not. And like I said yesterday, it goes back to the very famous story. If you're not all familiar with it, we can talk about it maybe another time, but it comes up in Brachot about Rabbi Yeshua and Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel on a number of occasions embarrassed Rabbi Yeshua because he didn't like his opinions. Okay, I'll remind you of a few of the key things that we're going to see that come back in this story. One is that he says to Rabbi Yeshua, I don't remember exactly how it goes, but they asked Rabbi Yoshua what the halacha is in a particular case where they knew he argued with Beit Shammai, with Rabban Gamliel. And he dafka didn't tell the truth. Like he said, the halacha is like Rabban Gamliel. And then the student, okay, he's caused the whole problem. He gets up and he says, I think I'm remembering it right, but he says, aren't you the one who says that it's Rashut and not Chovah, like Rabban Gamliel said? And then that's when Rabban Gamliel embarrasses him And basically, so there was a little bit of deception there where he first didn't exactly tell the truth. We're going to see a little deception in our story. Then in the end, there's another thing that repeats. It's not necessarily a central thing of that story, but I thought it was very interesting that the same thing comes up here. What happens in the end is they say, Rabban Gamliel, we're tired of this behavior. You're embarrassing people. We're kicking you out. You can't be the Nasi. They kick him out. They look for other people, right? They look for Rabbi Akiva. He has Nefzkut Avot. They go to Rabbi Yoshua. He was involved. No Gabba Davar. Can't be. And then they say, what about, we'll take Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was only 18. That's where we say, Harani Kiven Shivim Shana. And they bring him because he has Zchut Avot. He has wealth. We're going to see all that in this story also. It's all the same people. And then they decide they really need to bring back Rabban Gamliel. And they need to work things out. So they say, who's going to go to him? And there's this whole question, who's going to go to him? Okay? So in the end, Rabbi Yoshua goes to him, okay? And we're going to see the same thing comes up here where they ask, who's going to take care of this? Okay? Like there was obviously this, you know, it's the same signon. They're clearly trying to reflect, you know, connect these two stories. Or they're both coming out of a particular style of writing that was, you know, you could also say that maybe. Okay, let's read our story. Tashma, Bimei Rabbi Dosa ben Harkinas, Hutra Tzarat Habat Lachim. In his generation, okay, in his times, they were matir tzarat habat lachim, okay, meaning they went like Beit Shammai, okay, shmamina asu, Okay, so now, what can we learn from here? First, they're not even telling us the story. They're just telling us, in the times of him, they were matir tzarat habat. So what do you hear from here? That people who held like Beit Shammai actually did like Beit Shammai, because it means that people were doing like Beit Shammai. Shma Mina. Okay, that was just connected with our Gemara of trying to prove, did Beit Shammai do like what they said or not? Now we get to the story, Gufa. They want to go into this whole thing where it says, B'imei Rabbi Dosa ben Harkinas, hitiru tzarat habat lachim. Now we're going to see what happens. V'hayaha dabar kashe l'chachamim, mipnei shechacham gadol haya. Okay, the assumption here is that Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus was the one who was matir it. Okay? And the rabbi said, this is really difficult because he was this real big Talmid Chacham of the generation. And if he's going like Beit Shammai, we're in serious trouble. Because the Beit Midrash was run by Rabban Gamliel. He was a Beit Hillel guy. And generally, the halakha was like Beit Hillel. And here, this big rabbi is matir tzarat habat. What are we going to do about it? Now, part of the problem was, he wasn't found in the Beit Midrash. Okay? Why wasn't he in the Beit Midrash? So here, I was actually reading an article of Jeff Rubenstein. He writes a lot of books about Midrashic stories. And he writes that there's a big central theme in the Bavli, that everything centers around the Beit Midrash. So they had a problem with this story because it wasn't centered in the Beit Midrash, so they needed to add this line so that you'd understand why this story, as opposed to all the other stories, didn't take place in the Beit Midrash, because the Beit Midrash was the central focus of everything. So now, what happens? They say, Einav kamu milavo lebeit ha-midrash. He was old and he couldn't see well anymore, so he stopped coming to the Beit Midrash. And that's why he wasn't there. So now they say, Amru mi yelech v'yodiu. Who's going to go and tell him, right? Could you imagine this big issue, right? These rabbis, everyone's a little shy, because here they have to go to this huge Talmid Chacham and say, listen, you were matir tzarat habat, and this is a serious problem. And we can't have this. So who's going to do it? Amar lehem Rabbi Yeshua ani elech. So interesting that just like in the last story, Rabbi Yeshua says, I need to be the one. Also here, they say, I'm going to do it. Bacharav mi, and then who? Who's going to go with him? Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. Bacharav mi, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so these three characters that we have from our other story, they're the three that say they're going to go. Why they need the three? I assume a Beit Din, right? Three has this mashma'ut of being a Beit Din. Three people, significance. Hachuvam du'a petach beto. Okay, they didn't go in yet, right? They were a little bit, right, probably grouping together, huddling and saying, okay, how are we going to handle this? Nichnisa shifchato. Amra lo Rebbe chachmei Yisrael ba'in etzlecha. Okay, so his shifcha, already start to see that this is a wealthy guy. His shifcha comes and says, listen, they're waiting for you. They're outside. They came to meet you. Amar la yikansu. V'nichnisu, okay? He says, tell them to come in, and they come in. Very, very nice. Nice relationship. Tfaso l'Rabbi Yehoshua v'yishivu al mita shel zahav. He grabs Rabbi Yehoshua, okay? Tfaso sounds a little harsh, but I think it's just in a nice way. He grabs him and he sits him down. Amar le, Rabbi, amor l'tamidcha acher v'yeshev. Okay, so now what happens? He just hits Rabbi Yehoshua. Why? Because he knows Rabbi Yehoshua. He doesn't know who these other guys are. Okay, what's interesting is he knows them even though he can't see so well. I don't know how that works, okay? But he knows Rabbi Yehoshua, and therefore he puts him on a mitashel zahav, again showing his wealth. Amarli, so now Rabbi Yehoshua says, Rebbe, emor l'tamidcha acher v'yeshev, tell everybody else to sit down. Amarlo mihu. Okay, maybe somehow he recognized Rabbi Yeshua's voice. And maybe he didn't even realize that there were other people, and that's why he was telling him, there's other people with me, tell them to sit down. So then he says, well, who's the other person? Says Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. Amar, v'yesh lo ben la'azariah chavereinu? Ah, does Azariah have a son? Like, I didn't know. Kara alav ha-mikra hazeh. And then he says about this pasuk, I say about him this pasuk. Nar hayiti gam zakanti v'lo ra'iti tzadik ne'azav v'zar'o mevakesh lachem. Okay, this shows, again, the richness of Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. Because what does that pasuk mean? Right, I was a child, you know, I've lived a long life, and I've never seen a tzaddik ne'ezav that his kids have to look for bread. And it's here we have Azariah's son, and he's a nice, wealthy guy. Again, how did he know he was wealthy? If he couldn't see, maybe he could see a little bit. Okay. Tfasovi hoshivu al mitashal zahav. Puts him on a mitashal zahav. Amar le Rebbe, amor le tamidcha, acher v'yeshev. But there's another one. Tell him to sit. Amar le, umihu, Akiva ben Yosef. Amar le, atau Akiva ben Yosef, sheshimcha olech misof haolam ba'ad safo. Okay, we're going to have, I'll tell you right now, this is a little foreshadowing of what's to come. Okay? Are you the one who's got such a reputation from one end of the world to the other? Shev b'ni shev, kemotcha yirbu b'Yisrael. Okay, there should be lots like you. Okay, now there's all sitting. Now what are they supposed to do? Right? So what do? They're very smart. They say, hitchilu mesavivim oto b'halachot. They start shooting the breeze about halachot. Okay, oh, what do you say about this? What do you say about that? Okay? Ad shehigiu l'tzarat habad. Ech shehu, they get to the issue that they want to get to. Okay, a little deception here. Amru le tzarat habad mahu. They said, what do you think about tzarat habad? Amar lehen, machloket beit shamayu beit hilel. Okay, the answer is very, very diplomatic. That was the word I couldn't find yesterday. Diplomatically. So then they say, halacha kedibrei mi. Amar lehen, halacha kebeit hilel. Ah, just like with Rabbi Yeshua, where he says not what he holds, right? Except maybe not. Amru lei, v'halom ishimcha amru, halacha kebeit shamay. You know, these people say your name. Halacha kebeit shamay. Amar lehem, says to them, Dosa shamatim, o ben hirkinas shamatim. Did you hear it in the name of Rabbi Dosa? Or did you hear it in the name of the son of Harkinas? Why is that important? Amru lei, chaye rabbi stam shamanu. We heard it stam, which seems to mean the son of Hyrcanus, and that's not by your name specifically. Amar lehen, ach katan yeshli. Bechor satan hu v'yonatan shmo. Okay. I have a younger brother, which is interesting. He's a younger brother, but yet they call him the Bechor, right? But he's the Bechor of the satan. Okay? He's a no good guy. Okay? And his name is Yonatan. V'hu mitamidei shamai. Beware of him, that he doesn't start hitting you in the head with halachot. Okay? Beware of him, because he's got every answer in the book to be matir tzarat habat. Aval, okay, despite the fact, now this really is reminiscent of Tanuro Shel Achnai, okay, where one guy, right, was brilliant and he thought it should be this way, but the Chachamim couldn't understand his brilliance and they thought it should be the other way, and in the end they go against him, even though he's got every proof in the book and he's got all these simanim from Shamayim that he's right, and in the end we go by what the robe of the rabbis say. And here we have the same kind of thing where he's really brilliant and he knows all the answers, but Aval Me'ir Ani Alai Shamayim Va'aretz Sha'al Meducha Zo Yashav Chagai Anavi. Okay, on this pestle. Okay, there was a pestle right there. He's on this pestle, sat Chagai HaNavi. We're going back, way back. V'amar shlosha dvarim. He said three things. Number one, sarat habat asura. Okay, she can't marry the brother, like against Beit Shammai. I have a mesoret of Chagai HaNavi. So despite the fact that my brother could knock you down in a second, we have a mesoret. And that's the interesting interplay between, right, between intellect and mesoret, right? That sometimes intellect doesn't win out over mesoret. And that's really what the story, I think, is coming to talk about. That's number one. Number two, amonu mo'av ma'asrin ma'aser ani bashvi'it. We actually learned this, if you remember. We'll get back to it soon, okay? We won't explain it now because the Gemara is going to explain it. U'mekablim gerim mina karduyin u'mina tardumim. Okay, we're going to get Tarmudim. We're going to get back to them soon. So I'm going to skip it for right now, but there's three things we learn from Chagai HaNavi. Okay, now the Braita continues. Tana, or another Braita, finishes up the story. Kishe nichnisu, nichnisu bepetach echad. Okay, these three rabbis, they came as a team, right? Kishe yatzu, yatzu b'shlosha ptachim. Okay, now this is a very interesting line. You can go all sorts of directions with it, okay? Some people say they went out in separate doorways because they didn't want to meet the brother. So they figured if we go out one by one, then we won't all together meet him. What's going to happen if we all together meet him? We're a baiting, and if he wins us out, then he wins out the baiting. Mm-hmm. So if we go separately, at least we'll be protected. It's almost like Yaakov splits his camp, right? That's the way I really understand this. There's all different ways. Some people say they went out separately so that they would dafka meet him because they were these confident rabbis, and they said, we're going to, you know, if we go out all together, we might miss him. He might come the other way. So let's go out separately and try to find him. I think it was more they were trying to avoid him. Avoid him, like I said, altogether because they were nervous about what was going to happen. Also, I think there's an imagery here of they came in strong. We're going to get Rabbi Dosa to take back what he said. And they went out very weak because, number one, they have wrong information. Right there, it's embarrassing. I mean, here they come and they say, didn't you say this? And he says, no, that wasn't me. Very embarrassing for them. And they went out kind of humiliated. Right? And not only that, but he's telling them that there's someone out there who's going to argue with you and you better watch out. So they came out kind of humiliated, and that's why they all go separate doors. It's almost like they went out without their strength. Okay. Pagabo by Rabbi Akiva. Okay, he bumps into Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yonatan as it. Ach shele va'okme. Okay, and he asked him kushiot, and he basically knocked him down. Okay, so Yonatan, in the end of the story, who's the gibor here? Who wins out? Yonatan ben Harkinus. Amar lo, atahu Akiva sheshimcha holech misof olam v'ad sofo? You're the Rabbi Akiva that has such a reputation? Ashrecha shezachita l'shem, v'adayin lo higata l'ro'e bakar. Very nice that you got this title, but you didn't even get to the level of Ro'e Bakar. Okay, Ro'e Bakar, what's their issue? They take they're considered Pasula Edut, okay? And they certainly can be a Dayan, and here he's, you know, functioning as both. And he says, you're not even at the level of the Ro'e Bakar. What's wrong with them? Why are they Pasula Edut? Because they take their sheep to graze in other people's fields. And therefore, they're suspect that they're stealing. And also, in addition, they were considered Borim, like stupid people, because they were out in the fields. They weren't learning. They weren't in the Beit Midrash. They were the Ro'e Bakar. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, v'afilu l'Ro'e Tzon. Ro'e Tzon were even worse. He says, I'm not even at the level of the Ro'e Tzon. Okay? In other words, the Ro'e Bakar are worse than the Ro'e Tzon, and he's basically saying, I accept the humiliation. Like, I feel totally humiliated. I'm utterly and totally humiliated. That's the end of the story. Very powerful story. Very interesting ending, because in the end, the story ends with they're defeated, right? Or at least somewhat defeated. They're not totally defeated because they have Rabbi Dosa. Okay, there's different versions in the Yerushalmi. It comes to a different version in the end. In that version, it's actually interesting. Even though Rabbi Dosa supports them, he also tells his brother, watch out, these rabbis are coming. Like, he's kind of on both sides a little bit. Anyway, it's a very interesting story, and how the interplay between Masoret and intellect, and how you accept different opinions. It's a good story. Okay, you can go with this in lots of ways. We're going to end here because we have to move on. Okay, now we're going to get to the different things he talked about, those three things. So the first one we know are Tzarat Habat. Amonu Moab Masrin Maser Ani Bashvit. Why do they do Maser Ani Bashvit? Normally we do Maser Ani year number 3 and year number 6. In Shemitah, there's no Masrot. But Ammon and Moab, we're talking about the lands that were... Okay, what's the difference between Ammon and Moab? Those are the lands that Yoshua conquered, or even Moshe conquered these lands. Okay, they were conquered the first time, but they weren't conquered when Olei Babel came. When they came, Ezra and Nehemiah, they didn't conquer these lands. So if they didn't conquer these lands, what's the question? Do they have Kedushat HaAretz or not? If they have Kedushat HaAretz, then you're Noheg Shemitah. If they don't have Kedushat HaAretz, then you're not Noheg Shemitah. But what we're going to see is there's a distinction between Shemitah and Masrot. Even though they're not Noheg Shemitah in these lands, they are Noheg Masrot. Okay? So now, because the Masrot were a way of, like, a social thing of helping everybody. The Shemitah was a little bit different, and the Shemitah caused all sorts of problems, and they weren't going to do it if they didn't need to do it. Whereas Maser was really to help other people who didn't have money. So now, what do they say? So Amon and Moav... Okay, Da'amar Mar. Harbei krachim kavshu olei Mitzrayim, velo kavshu olei Bavel. There were many cities that the olei Mitzrayim captured, but not the olei Bavel. V'kidusha rishona kidusha l'sha'ata, velo kidusha l'atid lavo. Okay, the first kidusha was not a permanent kidusha, it was only a temporary one. V'hinichum, so therefore they weren't, these areas were not kadosh. V'hinichum kadesh yismuchu aleihem aniyim bashvi'it. And therefore, on the Shemitah year, when there's on the normal year, so they did the regular cycle of Masrot. But when it came to the Shemitah year, they said, if we're going to choose Maser Sheni or Maser Ani, we're going to do Maser Ani so that we help take care of the Aniim. Remember, the Maser Sheni was the stuff that they themselves ate in Jerusalem. It's just the thing they had to bring into Jerusalem and eat it there. But when it came to the Maser Ani, we'd rather they, if it's an extra year, let's add Maser Ani. Umikablim gerim mina karduyim veha tardumim. By the way, the tardumim come up, I don't know if you recall this, in Ajit Chela Regem and Ashuk with Hanukkah, the Gemara says, what is Ajit Chela Regem and Ashuk? What time period is that? That's how long we have to light our candles until the last people leave the Shuk. Who were those people? The Tarmudaim. Okay, the Tarmudaim were the people who sold the trees. They had something to do with trees. There was a few different opinions about what it is. Everyone agrees that they have something to do with trees. Some people say it's dafka because they're selling the trees that people need for the burning, as they were selling the trees, and therefore also the shemen that was used for the lights. And when they're the people who stay the longest, because people need, they go out the last to buy the wood in order to make fires in their house for nighttime. So They're the ones who are the latest people who stay in the shuk. Anyway, they were a nation of people that we see now. You can't accept Gerim from the Karduyim and the Tarbudaim. Now, why not? Because the assumption was that these were people that had married Jewish women. Okay? Now, if they married, there was a lot of intermarriage in these communities. Now, what's the relevance of intermarriage? So, first of all, if he's saying that the Haggai and Avi said, Mekablim Gerim from these two nations, that means that we're not choshesh from Mamzerim. Now, there could be two possibilities as to why. Okay, and here there's a bit of a confusion in the continuation of the sugya. I'll say from the start that it's not clear which direction they're going in. Okay, or some seem one way, some seem the other way. Either the question is the relationship, let's say he's not Jewish and she's Jewish. If the relationship, if someone intermarries, are their children Mamzerim or are they not Mamzerim? That's one machloket that we know exists. So is that part of their machloket? In other words, what's the issue? If this is a community of intermarried people and the children are Mamzerim, then we can't accept Gerim from them because, first of all, they're not really Gerim because this assumption is maybe the mother's Jewish. And if she is Jewish, then the kid will be a Mamzer, right? If the mother was Jewish and the intermarried, according to the opinion that the children born of this union are Mamzerim, then you can't marry them because they're Mamzerim. Okay, that's one option. To say that the question here was, and that's where he was siding on this machloket, saying they're not Mamzerim, and that's why we can accept Gerim from these nations. The other option is to say it was a question, were they intermarried or were they not? Or do we have to assume that if somebody comes from this place, was there so much intermarriage that we had to assume that anyone who came from here could possibly have been intermarried? In which case, they all sided on the side that the kids are Mamzerim. It's just a question of, do we have to worry that any child that comes from this city is, right, this reminds me of some case Seth had with work, that there was a city in Russia where there were a bunch of kids who were adopted. It was known the kids were adopted there. So the Rabbanut wouldn't accept any, or at least so claimed the Rabbanut. They wouldn't accept anybody from the city because they said, even though you proved me that your mother's Jewish, there was a lot of adoption in this city, and therefore we assume you must be adopted, unless you can prove otherwise. Which is a little crazy, right? In other words, why are you postulating me without really knowing the facts? Just because there were a lot of adoptions, does that mean we go by that or not? And that maybe is the question here. Do we assume you came from an intermarriage? We don't really know, because obviously they didn't know anymore. These people were intermarried. They didn't know anymore whether the women Jewish or not. So that's the question. So he says you can accept Gerim. So then they say, Ini, could it really be true? V'ha tani rami bar chezka, eim kablim gerim mina kardugim. We don't accept Gerim from a kardugim. So Amar Rav Ashi, Kartuyim Itmar. You're confusing the Karduyim and the Kartumim. The Kartuyim were a problem, not the Karduyim. Kedamra Inche, Kartuyim Psulim. Like we know, people say that the Kartuyim are Psulim. Be Kedamra. Some people say the whole back and forth went a little differently. The Tani Rama Rechezkel, Emekablim Gerim Mina Kartuyim. The Dafka, he said, from the Kartuyim. Okay, that the Braita did say Kartuyim, not Karduyim, but everybody thought, my love, Hainu Kartuyim, Hainu Karduyim. Everyone just thought that the Kartuyim and the Karduyim were the same. And then Amar Rav Ashi, lo, Kartuyim Lechud, the Karduyim Lechud, Kedamri Inche, Kartuyim Psile. Okay, either which way, they end up saying they're different. Rabbi Yochanan Besavi, de Amri Travahu, okay, Rabbi Yochanan Besavi said, Ein Mekablim Gerim Mina Tarmudim. Okay, they disagreed with this Psach. That you can accept Gerim. So now they say, Mi amar Rabbi Yochanan hachi? Did he really say that? Bahatnan, kolak tamim haba'im min arekem tohim. Rabbi Yehuda mitame, b'pnei shehem gerim v'to'im. Okay, this is an interesting sugya. A ketem of an ishanida is pasul. Okay, it's considered, right, a ketem is, but it's only asur midrabanan. Okay, this is what's important. A ketem is asur midrabanan. Okay, and blood itself is asur midoranta. Okay, this has all sorts of ramifications on women in ketamim, and when you see a ketam, that's where we're made fell on ketamim in general, because it's only an isur derabanan. The rabbi said that we're going to assume, now what's the difference? The difference really is if you have a spot on your clothes and it's wet still, then it's considered dam. We saw this before. If it was still lach, we had this with the woman with a spindle and she put it in her mouth and maybe it was still lach because it's liquid that comes out of a woman who's nida. So the blood is an isur d'oraita. So if it's still wet, it's an isur d'oraita. If it's a ketan, it's already dry, then the beged is asur midrabanan, it's tameh. Okay, midrabanan. Tameh we're talking about now. The rabbis were gozer on Ovdei Kochavim. Okay, they said non-Jews even though they don't have dinei tumah v'tara, we're going to say that anything that comes from a non-Jew is also tameh. Okay, a beged like of a ketem. Okay, so what are we going to say? We're going to say on the Avdei Kochavim, when they made this gzerah, they said it only on the dam, only if it's lach. Okay, only if it's still wet, they were gozer, but not if it was a ketem, because if we have an Isur D'oraita, so we're going to be gozer on Avdei Kochavim, but on the Isur D'Rabbanan, we're not going to be gozer. So ketamim of non-Jews is mutar. Okay, it's not tameh. So that's what they say here. Kol ketamim that come from rekem are tehorim, because the assumption is they come from non-Jews. Right? Let's say you just have a beged with a ketem on it. Do you assume it came from a Jew or a non-Jew? Rabbi Yehuda says, no, they're metameh mipnei shehem gerim v'toim. Now, this is not gerim in the normal mashmaut. These non-Jewish people that come from Rechem are Jews who converted out. Okay? But we know that Jews who convert out are still considered Jews. And therefore, right, they're toim. They don't know, right? They don't know what they're doing. They think they're non-Jews, but they're really Jews. And therefore, we have to judge it like the Jews, in which case they're aser. But mibena avdei kochavim, but if it's for sure from avdei kochavim, they're tehorim. Okay, then everyone agrees that they're tehorim. Ba'avina ba kapasik v'tane. Okay, now they asked here, when the Braita said, mibena avdei kochavim afilu min termod. They said, when it said mibena kochavim, avdei kochavim, they said, they added the words, va'afilu min termod, which means what? That the Tarmudaim are not married to Jewish women. If they were married to Jewish women, then their tamim would be a problem, like we said before, right? If they were married to Jewish women, then that would be the gerim v'to'im. So there's a version of the Braita where they add on words to the Braita, and they say, afilu min termod. So what do you see here? And Rabbi Yochanan, I think, was the... right. So this is, now what's the issue with Rabbi Yochanan? Because this is a Stam Mishnah. And the explanation of the Stam Mishnah is that it means even mina termod. Okay? So now, what's the issue? Before, what did Rabbi Yochanan say? He said, ein mekablim gerim mina termudim. Because the assumption is they're intermarried. If the assumption is they're intermarried, then their blood should be fine. Then their blood should be a problem. Because they're Jews, even though they think they're not Jews, but they are, they're Jews. Okay, it's an interesting sugi about intermarriage, right? And people who think they're not Jews. And so what does he say? That because they added the words, afilu min termod, how could Rabbi Yochanan say that? So now, v'am Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan says explicitly, I forgot the sign. Am Rabbi Yochanan, zot omeret mekablim gerim mi termod. Okay, so what do you learn from here? That you can accept gerim from termod because the assumption is they're of dekochavim. And he said before, e mekablim. Okay, so v'chite mazot v'lo. Okay, maybe you would say, a second. Maybe you would say zot v'lo. Oh, right, v'lo sfirale. Oh, sorry, that's why I read it wrong. Okay, v'chite mazot v'lo sfirale. Maybe he's saying that's what there is, but he doesn't actually think so himself, and that's what the Mishnah says, but he doesn't think that that's the case. He says, Zot Omeret, this Mishnah implies, or this, right, this explanation of the Mishnah implies that Eim Kablin Gerim Min HaTarmo, but I don't think that that's the case. Bahama Rabbi Yochanan Halacha Kestam Mishnah, but Rabbi Yochanan holds, in general, we say Rabbi Yochanan always holds like a Stam Mishnah, and if he always holds like a Stam Mishnah, then how could he go against this? It doesn't make sense that he would go against this. So in the end, they answer, Emorai Ninu Valibit to Rabbi Yochanan. There's two opinions of Rabbi Yochanan. Some say that Rabbi Yochanan thinks Tarmudim, you could accept Gerim, and some people say he doesn't think you can accept Gerim from Tarmod, and that's the way we understand it. Two different versions of what Rabbi Yochanan actually thought. Okay, so now, Mi Tarmod, my time alone. Now, why can't you accept from Tarmod? In other words, now we want to know the history. When did these people intermarry? Why was there a whole community of people intermarried? We want to know historically what happened here. Plikei bar Rabbi Yochanan b'Sivya. Chad amar Avdei Shlomo, v'chad amar mishum b'noit Yerushalayim. Okay, what's going on here? Bishlam alaman damar mishum Avdei Shlomo. Kasavar, oved kochavim ve'eved, haba haba Yisrael, havlab mamzer. What happened? The Avdei Shlomo who came to work in the right to build, first of all, why does this connect with the Tarmudaim? Because they chopped down trees. He brought all these people to chop down trees to build the Beit HaMikdash. So, if you say that they were of Avdei Kochavim who came, the Avdei Shlomo, so they were of Avdei Kochavim, and then you have to say that he holds by what? He holds that Avdei Kochavim be'Eved Habava Israel have la mamzer. Remember, I said there was a machloket about it. So you have to say that he holds it was Avdei Kochavim who married them. Because they married them, now the children are mamzerim. Because he held the children of Avdei Kochavim and Yisraelim are mamzerim. Ela l'man damar mishum benot Yerushalayim mahi. What are these benot Yerushalayim? What's the issue? What happened here? Plige bar Rav Yosef and Rabbanan. There's a machloket between Rav Yosef and Rabbanan about who these people were. Utravayim mishmei deraba barbachana. Okay? Chanamar, tracer alfe gavre, beshita alfe kashtuye. Bechanamar, tracer alfe gavre, uminayu shita alfe kashtuye. What, okay, here we're talking about the, when, okay, we're going to see in 1 second. Besha'ash nifnesu ovde kochavim lahechal, hakol nifnu al kesef zahav, vehem nifnu al benot Yerushalayim. In the time of the Churban Bayit Rishon, what happened? Either there were 12,000 foot soldiers and 600 archers out of the entire army, and the entire army went right away for the Kesef Zahav. But these 18,000 people went for the Benot Yerushalayim. Okay? Or, the second opinion is, there were 12,000 of these foot soldiers, of which 6,000 of them, okay, in which case you're just arguing about the numbers. Was it 12,000 or 18,000? Saying, of which of these 12,000 foot soldiers, 6,000 of them were archers, and those people, again, the rest of the army, other than these 12,000, went for the gold and the silver. But these 12,000 went for the Benot Yerushalayim. So it's either 12,000 or 18,000. Now, how do you know that there were, this happened? Shneamar, Nashim B'Tzion inu B'Tulot Ba'arei Yehuda. Okay, they tortured these B'Tulot in Arei Yehuda, and that's where these Tarmudim, that's who these Tarmudim are. They're the people who came in the Churban. They slept with all these women, right? They attacked, they went after the Benot Yerushalayim. And it's the children of these women that we're talking about. And that's why there's a chashash that there's mamzerim in there. Okay. We're going to stop here. The rest of it is a few drashot on psukim. We can get through it quickly in the beginning of tomorrow's daf. But that's basically the issue here about these Avdei. So we've got through, as we were at the story brought up these three things. We wanted to know what are these three things. And again, I'm just going to remind you that there's a bit of a, it's a bit disconcerting. It's not clear in the end. Are we worried? Are they mamzerim or not? Or are we worried if they would, even if they would be mamzerim, do we have to be choshes that anyone who comes from here is one of these unions of a Jew, right? Because obviously a lot of these non-Jews also marry non-Jewish women. So that's really the question here, which isn't exactly resolved. What exactly was the issue? Let's see what's coming on. Thank you.